From the Land to Grant University in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 11th day of January 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. And as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast for the global growing regions with Mike Tenord. Along the way, we'll get a quick update of some agricultural news out of Washington, D.C., and hear about this weather and the impact it might have and what producers should do with their beef cattle herds, all on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, no update of the commodity markets today as I'm traveling. I'm in Northern Illinois at NIU, Northern Illinois University, for the final of the three Illinois Farm Economic Summits. We've had great crowds all week, just finished up for the day. And, you know, all the ag economists did a great job. A lot of questions on our end. And I know that our guest on Thursday in this segment of the program, Matt Bennett of agmarket.net, has been traveling today as well. You were speaking in Rind Lake, south of Mount Vernon today, is that correct?
Yes, I was down there for farm credit. Eric Snodgrass and I were on the bill. So, I actually shared some of what the farm doc guys are showing out as far as, you know, profit margins. And obviously after you look at the sheet that they put out, I believe this week, associated with cash rent profitability, I think, my depressing talk got even more depressing. you just talk about the facts, you know, like, well, what are you looking at, you know, from a stocks perspective? What are you looking at if you're in a high input type scenario? You know, and 24 right now definitely looks to be a challenge, and so I just like to lay it out there. Hey, this is what's going on, and how are we going to deal with it?
Yeah, those crop budgets that were developed by Nick Paulson and Gary Schnicki released on Tuesday, you can see them online now at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. The numbers that were depressing were the $4.50 season's average cash price they use. And then, because you were in Mount Vernon, you saw the largest corn and soybean losses in the state. I think they were about $161 and $169 per acre. Those are on cash rented acres. They get better as you go northward, but they're not great in any respect. So it was a depressing message. What do you tell producers about how they should handle marketings of old crop to help make up for that, because we're looking at lower prices already, and how to manage the new crop?
You know, there's some challenges ahead of us, Todd. You know, if the USDA is correct, and I don't expect any major revisions on production on Friday, but if they're correct, that'd be the biggest crop we've ever raised in totality. Not the largest yield, just biggest crop, because we planted 94.9 last year, which certainly gave us the ability to have yield come down a little and still have a huge crop. So with that being the case, I don't think the producer is over 33% sold at this point. So, you know, you've got some headwinds coming at you. I guess my best advice in that situation, you know, if you do get rallies, and it would be it'd be unheard of to have a year where you don't get, you know, a rally or two, to at least have something to take a look at. I'm in more of a sell the rallies type mentality, at least locking in some income if you get black ink. And I say if, because certainly in some of these situations, especially, you know, in some of the cash rent situations, it's hard to find black ink using those types of budgets. Now, I do know, that some producers have a little different costs of production given economies of scale and whatnot, but it's certainly going to be a pretty tough go. Now, as far as new crop goes, you know, it's a long marketing year. We're used to being able to sell on a profit in advance of even planting. This year is not likely to be the case. And so we got to remember it's a long marketing year, and there's no sense in locking in a loss right off the bat. Longer term, I guess I'm not real bullish, but at the same time, you know, could we use our bins and maybe be able to etch out some profit margin? And I think that could be the case. So I'm not going to panic just yet. I definitely want to see the USDA report, see if we get some sort of a turn of events. I am looking for some friendly demand numbers on Friday, but it remains to be seen how that manifests itself.
Well, tell me a little bit about the reports that are coming out tomorrow. There are four of them: grain stocks, WASD, final crop production report, and the acreage numbers for wheat. You'll be watching the demand side. Are you hoping that maybe exports jump up, or ethanol demand has been good? What are you suggesting? Or maybe it's feed.
Yeah, I mean, so a little bit of everything potentially. And here's what I'm looking at, Todd. You know, if you look at the first quarter of the marketing year, fourth quarter of the calendar year, corn usage for ethanol, the corn grind was fantastic as we got closer to the end of the year. You know, the average over the last 5 or 6 weeks is 105 or above, which is well in advance, you know, of what we need to do to keep pace with the USDA. So I believe if the USDA wants to make an upward revision, you know, 50, maybe up to 100 million bushels is possible. I think they've got the ammunition to do so. You look at feed usage, and I know we're at a 65-year low on the cattle herd as far as total inventory goes, but cattle on feed, you know, the folks that are eating the corn, you know, these guys are running 105% of a year ago. So, you know, with cattle on feed numbers where they're at, you know, I could certainly see a little bit of an upward revision in feed usage. And then, of course, exports have been a pleasant surprise. So I do expect disappearance in that first quarter of the marketing year to be better, you know, than maybe what some folks are expecting. Now, is it going to be enough to really stem the tide? Well, you know, I could see potentially a sub 2 billion carry on this report tomorrow. If it is, it'd probably be razor thin underneath it. But I just think that if something like that would happen, it would certainly make the market look at things just a little bit different. The mentality, if you will, might change. Maybe you get more of a supportive tone in here, at least until we sort acreage out.
Yesterday, CONAB in Brazil released its set of numbers. They did lower their soybean figure only to 155 million metric tons. How low do you think that number should be, if it should be adjusted lower? And what did you think of the corn figures that came out yesterday?
Yeah, I highly doubt that the USDA goes below CONAB by much. USDA typically stair steps. I know some of the folks we talked to down there feel like the crop's been hurt more than maybe what CONAB suggested. Obviously, CONAB wants to see more harvest results. I think they kind of punted, if you will. They know the crop's been hurt, but they don't want to, you know, make a big commitment just yet. And then as far as their corn, I mean, we've known all along that they were going to plant less corn down there this year. This is the 18th year in a row they're planting more soybeans, but they're backing off of corn a little bit. Cotton's picking up some acres. And what that does for them, you know, especially in a challenging year as far as the climate has been concerned down there, definitely don't have the buffer they've got as far as being able to step into the world market, you know, and sell corn to the tune that they have. Now, it would still suggest that they're going to be the world's largest corn exporter, but they're going to maybe shave 150, 200 million bushels, if CONAB's correct, off of what they exported this previous marketing year. So, you know, I've got to think that we got to keep a close eye on this Safrina crop. With them planting less corn, it definitely makes them subject to potentially, you know, giving the corn market a little bit of life if they don't get good weather, on top of the fact that they're planting less acres.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it. Safe travels back home.
Absolutely, Todd.
That's Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net. Well, here's some government news about the funding deal that has been struck and how it may face some hurdles yet, especially for USDA. One deal simply is not enough. It'll likely take a second deal to avert a January 19 shutdown of USDA and other federal agencies. The good news of a handshake deal by the two top leaders of the House and Senate on a total spending figure for the rest of the fiscal year was quickly dashed by a bigger problem: the clock. Senate GOP leader Mitch McConnell on the difficulty passing the USDA and three other spending bills by the first of the two shutdown deadlines on January 19.
The simplest thing is take a week in the Senate. So I think frequently the House doesn't understand how long it takes to get something through the Senate.
Where it takes 60 votes to move major bills and overcome filibusters, unlike the House that works by a simple majority. Ag Senator and Republican Chuck Grassley says House GOP insistence on regular order also takes time.
I think there's still going to be an attempt to pass individual appropriation bills, and that's going to necessitate a short continuing resolution until we get them passed.
And House Speaker Mike Johnson said last year he would not do another CR or stopgap funding bill. Now he says,
I'm not ruling out anything, committing to anything other than getting these appropriations done. And I think we can, and we're pushing everybody hard.
But Senate GOP leader Mitch McConnell says the CR is the only choice.
We need to prevent a government shutdown. And so the obvious question is, how long does the CR need to be? And that'll be up to the majority leader and the speaker to determine the length.
Speaker Johnson, like his ousted predecessor, is also facing a rebellion from his hard right flank, not just on more CRs, but on the lack of big cuts on social policy riders in the top line funding deal.
Teresa Steckler, beef cattle specialist and educator from the University of Illinois Extension, now joins us to discuss the cold weather that's making its way into the state. And what livestock producers really need to think about as it's related to their animals. Hi, Teresa. Thank you for being with us. There are some frigid temperatures that are on the way to the state of Illinois, across the whole of the country, in fact. And livestock producers, anybody with animals, really needs to be thinking about what should be done. Do you have some suggestions?
There's a couple different things going on here. One is the fact we've had a lot of rain as of late. Hair coats may be wet, which has also led to wet ground. With these frigid temperatures that are coming, we really need to get some corn stovers or something, straw, something down on the ground to protect these animals. Some guys are calving, but most of those are probably calving in a barn to keep the calves out of the wind. If you do not have a windbreak, try to figure out how to make a windbreak that could really help these animals out in these trying times when the wind chill drops below 20 degrees. As the wind picks up and they have a wet hair coat, they need even more grub, more resources, more nutrition to get them through these trying times.
If you've done that and you're watching your animals, what kinds of things might you be on the lookout for that would give you suspicion?
One of the big things is looking for cattle shivering. They will go into shivering mode if they're not getting enough nutrition, because generally all their heat's produced by the rumen. So they need to have good, high-quality feedstuffs during this time to keep the microbial action going and producing the heat. But if they have a wet hair coat and you're not feeding them enough, they'll probably go into shivering. They'll probably quit eating, and they'll probably quit drinking water. So keep a good eye on the cattle. The other thing that you want to really do is, we're going to have a spring breeding coming up. Need to provide areas for bulls to be able to rest when they lay down. You want to ensure that the scrotums do not get frostbitten or any other areas vital to reproduction. So that could really impact the bull's ability to get your cows pregnant.
Anything else we need to know about this cold weather and temperatures in livestock?
Big thing is provides a little bit of additional grub, provide a windbreak. We're supposed to have some really high winds coming up. So with a wind chill, wet hair coat, wet, muddy areas, any way that you can keep them up out of the mud, get them a windbreak, that'll help you out and help the girls out immensely.
That's University of Illinois Extension's Teresa Steckler. Again, she says the primary needs for beef cattle as the temperatures drop are to give them a place to shelter from the wind and to increase their feed rations. Let's check in now on the global growing regions to see what the climate and weather has been like and might be with Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online. Thanks for being with us again, Mike. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me here, Todd.
Begin in South America, Argentina for me. Crop there has had a rough start, relatively speaking, but looks pretty decent now, I think.
Well, it was dry a long time ago there, but there's been some pretty good rains over the last several weeks and even into November. So because of that, conditions are looking pretty ideal. only very small proportions of corn and soybeans were drier than normal in recent weeks and months. And so the soil moisture situation today is much, much better than it was a year ago. There will be more rain over the next couple of weeks as well. And the main threat that we're watching is what comes in on Monday into Tuesday. A pretty large cluster is going to move through the heart of the growing belt at that time. And because of that, we think these soil moisture conditions will stay pretty ideal all the way into the end of the month. Once we get that far out, it's always hard to say what the weather looks like. But the point for Argentina is that there's no concerns right now and that the crop is likely looking very good.
Does that go for parts of southern Brazil and Paraná and maybe some other areas just to the east or north of Argentina, but not in the Mato Grosso area?
Well, conditions there were actually pretty wet a couple of months ago, but it's been drying out, which is kind of hard to believe because parts of Paraná would benefit from rain. They haven't seen a whole lot over the last 3 to 4 weeks, and they're starting to show up in some of our dryness data, with essentially half of the crop in the southern region being drier than ideal, which makes up for about 25% of the total crop. That's for soybeans. So we need rains in these southern areas. There will be some going forward, so it's not like we're going to have the redevelopment of a drought or something like that. But it's not going to be very wet. The main storm track, although it will be nearby, doesn't look to be setting up in an ideal manner because of areas of high pressure to the north and the south. So in the end, it'll be kind of a mixed bag in that southern Brazil growing region with more rain ideal, but maybe not a total problem like we had further to the north earlier in this year.
In that center west area, Mato Grosso, other places, how are conditions today?
Well, it's been a lot wetter over the last 2 weeks, and that's exactly what they needed. If you look at the period of October through December, it was the driest on record in Goiás and Mato Grosso. And those records go back about 45 years, so that's at least how long it was since it was this dry. Even December was the second driest on record, so we needed a lot of rain there. We have seen some over the last couple of weeks, but you need to keep in mind that these were not very heavy rains. They were just normal to a little bit wetter than normal. So I'm sure that it helped out the crops that needed rain, but did it wipe out the story and suddenly market change to great conditions? Unlikely, just there wasn't that much rain to make for that kind of a change. As we move forward, the rains don't look all that ideal in this region either. Upper level high pressure is redeveloping as we speak, and that will be a dominating factor over the next 10 days. So just isolated to scattered thunderstorms as opposed to heavy rainfall in those areas. Once we get toward the end of the month, there's a hint of a cool front moving in, and that will need to verify or else January is going to end up being drier than normal as well. So that's kind of the next thing to start thinking about, with kind of a mixed bag in Brazil while Argentina is looking pretty ideal.
Here in the United States, we're looking for wave two of weather to come through. Some of that will be as rainfall, but as Teresa Steckler, beef cattle specialist, was warning producers earlier in our program, once that comes through, cold weather could be an issue, especially for livestock. And can you tell me a little bit about this weather system and what it means for different parts of the country?
Well, the easiest way to discuss this system is by focusing on weather in the plains. Out there, there'll be a little bit of snow over the next 12 hours or so, but once that snow moves out, it'll turn intensely cold for about 4 to 5 days. We'll see temperatures in the minus zeros and minus tens in Kansas and Nebraska, and in the minus tens and minus 20s in the Dakotas, with even some minus 30s to potentially even minus 40 in parts of central and eastern Montana. So this whole area here is going to be extremely cold, and that doesn't account for the wind. The winds will be strong at times in this setup, and that will drop wind chills down to the minus 20s to minus 40s. And even though cattle are a little bit different than humans in that, you know, they have all that fur, so their wind chill would be a little bit different than what we might experience as a human, because that's what that scale was made for. But the point is, it's going to be windy at times and exceptionally cold. Now, the good news, if there is any with this, is that the ground is going to harden. We've seen a lot of wet conditions across the plains over the last couple of weeks, and that's due to several rain systems and several snow systems, and with temperatures mostly in the 30s and 40s. Well, that'll be a thing of the past here for the next 10 days, because it'll freeze the ground and that won't be a problem. But just a tiny bit of snow here and there, which we do expect, will blow around, and that will keep these cattle stressed. The biggest system to monitor beyond what's happening today and into tonight is what happens on Sunday and Monday. We'll see very cold temperatures with the system moving across the plains, and that should produce about 1 to 5 inches in Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, and Colorado. And that's just not an ideal setup. It was only Monday that we had civil emergencies across several counties of that region because of blinding snow with extremely strong winds, and that's what led to some of those plant closures earlier in the week. So that same area is not totally out of the woods. We shouldn't see a storm, anything like that again, but a lot of cold and some wind, and that's just not an ideal setup for livestock.
Do you have worries about the winter wheat crop anyplace?
The only real concern would be in Montana. If you look at that area, there's not very much snow on the ground, with some of it even completely snow-free. And we're going to have temperatures in the minus 20s and minus 30s for 2 to 3 mornings in a row starting up this weekend. And so you just can't have temperatures that cold and not expect burn back or even winter kill. So that's going to be your area of concern. As you move to the south, though, part of the reason it's going to be so cold is because you do have snow on the ground. That layer of snow prevents cold air or warm air from the earth from escaping, and that's what helps temperatures to drop so quickly, because you basically lose your main source of warmth at nighttime, which is the earth. So those areas are not going to have as much of a problem, if any problem, because you have deep snow on the ground, so it can get as cold as you want. But if the wheat is covered by snow, it doesn't matter.
And finally, here in Illinois, parts of the Midwest, what does this system that's coming in now mean as far as rainfall or snowfall in different parts of the region?
Well, the main thing is that it's going to benefit the soft red winter wheat crop. We had a big system earlier in the week, which diminished dryness across most of it. And then we have another big system moving through that will further diminish it. So dryness is not going to be a problem for either soft red winter wheat or hard red winter wheat after this system moves through. There will be heavy snow and strong winds along the north side of it. And that's kind of the big concern for logistics. Somewhere along and north of I-80, we'll have blizzard conditions, most likely to the northwest of Chicago and probably through Milwaukee. So that corridor is going to have a pretty significant logistics disruption, maybe even extending into parts of Iowa. That's all tomorrow and tomorrow night. Once we get beyond then, though, it's a lot quieter. So beyond logistics, it's mainly a beneficial thing for wheat.
Thank you much, Mike. We'll talk with you again next week.
Yes, have a great week, Todd.
You too. That's Mike Tenora. He is with T-Storm Weather, tstorm.net. online. Hey, don't forget that tomorrow the United States Department of Agriculture will update the final numbers from the 2023 crops in the United States, as well as the World Agricultural Supply and Demand estimates. Take a look at wheat acreage around the U.S. and have the grain stocks numbers. Those are all due out at 11 a.m. Central Time. Find them at willag.org under the USDA tab just after that. And of course, we'll have our Commodity Week program. That'll be produced tomorrow after the report, so you won't see it tonight, up on our website at willag.org. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Our theme music is written, performed, and produced by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.